Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die. I had a dream about a big blue sky called heaven. Admission free, no one left out or left behind. And I saw Jesus walking on the water, flying in an aeroplane, baby. Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die. And is my soul gonna make it? And when I go, who's still with me by my side? What will I do there? Just float around forever, stare at my reflection in the blue sky. Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die. Now tell me who would want to live forever? And tell me why should not a sinner get to see the Holy Ghost, the saints, and the Madonna, find my own nirvana in the blue sky. Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die. Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die. Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die. We'll all just float there in the ever after, eternal laughter of the blue sky. Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die. Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die. Big blue sky called heaven, take us when we die.
All right. A little clap for you. Good morning. How are you, buddy?
Doing all right.
So this is the Delaware Live Music Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, part of the Rehoboth Social Podcast. A whole bunch of podcasts going together, and started doing this podcast. We met 3 or 4 weeks ago, maybe, down at Chesapeake in Maine.
Amidst the cracking of lobster claws.
Yeah, the cracking of lobster claws and the celebration of actually my in-law's 50th wedding anniversary. So, but I was sitting down there. You're playing down there. Came over and chatted with you a bit. Just loved your music. Just the few minutes that we chatted, just thought you were a really great guy. And I asked you if you wouldn't mind coming to do this new podcast that I was going to try to do, promoting guys just like you, sitting on a stool with a guitar, with the case open, a few CDs and some tips. And it's my favorite kind of music. I love the environment, and I think it's an awesome scene. So I appreciate you coming on. Leo DeSanto, good morning.
Happy to be here. Yeah, I love the medium. I always enjoy doing podcasts from either end of the mic or from either end of the table, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because we've been communicating back and forth. You were coming down to Rehoboth. It is Memorial Day weekend, and you were going to do a show at Chesapeake in Maine, by the way, is an amazing restaurant, part of the Dogfish Group, right?
Yeah, I play both of those venues. Next time I come down, I'll be playing in the tap room on the big stage. But Chesapeake in Maine hired me off of the sidewalk after I was unloading from the Dogfish Head Brews and Eats venue. The manager was out there, and he said, "Hey, I need some music for tomorrow night." So that's how I connected with them, and they're really friendly folks over there. They've been good to me.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's funny, that's a different podcast, but they've changed, you know, rebuilt and got some new stuff, new menu, and Very good. Very good place. So if you haven't tried it, go check it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you and I have been chatting. You came down for the weekend, and then you're like, I need a place to park my van. And you parked in our backyard, and my kids are like, there's a guy in the van in their backyard.
There's a hippie back there with a dog.
I go, it's rock and roll, baby. It's exactly. Rock and roll, man.
That's
so,
usually the discreet inquiry follows on the heels of any discussion about me coming to town. It's like, so you know any place where a guy could get away with parking a beat up old Chevy van with a dog in it?
I was going to tell you, you can park there anytime.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a huge help. It really is. That's how I get my traveling done. You know, that's how it's accessible to me, is not having to pay for hotels, not having to pay for campsites. You know, that's why I do the van hippie thing.
I love it. Hold on. Let's see. Well, it all came true last night, and the van showed up, and we were excited to see you. So, once again, thank you. So, let's just, you know, I thought maybe it'd be fun to share a little of your story. I know you're from upstate Pennsylvania, right?
Actually, southeastern PA. Yeah.
Okay, so.
South central.
And, you know, just you and I chatting a little bit last night and this morning, you know, you're like on tour, right? And you're kind of playing out of your
pretty
van?
Pretty much perpetually. It's what I do full time. And I play a lot regionally in central PA and Maryland and, you know, surrounding areas. But then I also spend about a third of the year these days on the road, traveling with my dog Ringo and just doing gigs wherever there's a paycheck and a few willing ears and some willing hearts, you know.
Yes.
The travel is a lifestyle that I'm kind of seeking to sustain through the music. You know, the two things kind of feed each other. So.
Hold on, I'm going to stop. I got to close that door. Hold on, that's a Harley. Yeah, well, I had to shut the door because there's some Harleys outside, and I was like, uh-oh. So it's definitely warming up. It's getting a little stuffy inside, so I had to get the door open. But we shut that. It won't bother us anymore. So perpetually on tour.
Yeah, travel is something that I've been way into ever since I hit adulthood, really. I started traveling kind of as a roaming hippie when I was 18, and I haven't looked back. You know, I've been to a few dozen countries and 49 of the 50 U.S. states. I haven't made it to Hawaii yet because I can't take my van there.
Yeah, right.
But it's on the list. It looks beautiful, of course. So music and travel go together so well. The guitar is kind of the magic carpet for all of these incredible experiences I've gotten to have and beautiful places I've gotten to see. And incredible friends I've gotten to make, because oftentimes just the act of playing music out on the street is enough to get you an introduction to some wonderful people and often an invitation to some fantastical places. So
yeah,
I basically, playing music supports my travel lifestyle.
Well, listen, you slept in our backyard last night, and our backyard's amazing.
Yeah, it was. We had a beautiful, comfortable sleep out there. It was nice and cool, and woke up to bird song. It was...
Yeah, it's one of the very blessed to have that house and that backyard. It's, you know, not a big house but a big backyard, and it's we spend a lot of time back there, and it was fun to, I thought it was awesome to have you out there in the van. I was like, I would have let you sleep in the house, but I think you're more comfortable in your van.
Very much so. I was telling somebody just the other day that I often decline invitations to sleep in the house, and people tend to think that I'm just being, you know, I don't want to be a bother, or I'm being modest or something, and you know, of course I don't want to be a bother, but the truth is that that's my space and where I'm comfortable, and my dog's comfortable. He relaxes in there. It's like it's his crate, you know. He doesn't get anxious when I leave him for a few hours to go to the gig, and it's kind of decorated with mementos from the different places we've been, and you know, some curtains hand sewn by my girlfriend. It's just, you know, it's a home space. So,
well, and it's funny because a place like that is like 99.9% awesome, except for that last part where you have to find a place to park. And I think once you've got a nice spot to park, you're just, it's 100% complete. And I had mentioned you could come in the house, or do you want any food? And you're like, I got food, I ate, I've got coffee. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop mothering this guy right now and just let him do his thing.
It's always, you know, usually like a you know, bathroom access and a shower sometimes is all I ever really tend to ask, because doing this as long as I have, I've gotten to know what I need. I know I need my coffee grinder and some fresh beans and the little camp stove to cook in the morning, and
it's all I need.
You know, I got my bed, I got my books, I got my guitar.
Well, you know, it's funny, and I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but, you know, growing up as a kid and watching bands and looking at, like, it's, you know, the inside sleeves of albums, and there's always these pictures, like, of back in the day, and you're like, God, how cool would that have been to, like, have, you know, Dave Matthews, Sleep on Your Couch back in 98 right? Or Pearl Jam, to Sleep in Your Backyard back in 1989. And, you know, because it was like, it wasn't about fame. It was just about, you know, trying to be there for guys trying to live out their dream, right? And so when you're like, can I crash in your parking lot? I'm like, absolutely. Maybe this is the picture, right, that I look back on and say, I remember when Leo was just sleeping in our backyard. And, you know, maybe one day you find some, you know, big time fame or something. But it's always like,
I fully intend to be famouser than hell. But
absolutely.
I've often asked myself, though, how much I would want it to change. You know, like, would I enjoy doing what I do now as much if I were on a tour bus just going through all the big cities, not getting to see much? And I think the answer is no. So I think that, and, you know, I don't think I'm in any danger of finding major pop stardom. So I don't think my lifestyle is under siege or anything like that. But I would make sure that any kind of growth that happens for me, as it does, you know, slowly but surely, is growth towards the life that I want to live, which is basically the one that I am living now.
Well, and even not even besides the fame, it's just like reminding myself that, you know, one of the fun things that people love to talk about is, you know, down here at the beach, property, right? You know, and there's some people that were big players and owning property back in, you know, the 60s and 70s. And then, you know, 50 years later, and the property's worth a lot of value, right?
Yeah, sure.
And people say, well, you know, I wish I'd have done that. It's like, go to Milford, buy a bunch of land up there. Because, you know, in 50 years up there will be probably more valuable. But the point is that it's like being there for the beginning and not always wanting, you know, the final outcome right away. It's like, you know, I'm glad I can be part of your journey and look back and say, I remember when, you know, these are those cool pictures that you find on album sleeves that you're like, God, you know, we don't really put the value in the beginning. We're always looking for that
payout.
Well,
that's the problem, right, is that oftentimes we're living now, considering it as an investment in something that's to come, whereas the truth is you have no idea what's to come or
right.
if anything is. So if you're not working towards living the life that you would like to be living right now, then you're banking on a maybe. You know, so in terms of buying property or something, you could buy property because you think it's going to appreciate in value, or you could buy it because it's really where you want to be.
Absolutely.
And I know I would take the latter path there, because you really can't go wrong by making yourself happy now, because now is the thing that's real.
Well, and I think a lot of people coming through this whole little thing we went through the last couple of years are starting to realize, you know, happiness is very important, right?
Yeah.
And why are we doing what we're doing, for what sort of happiness? And I think we're all took a break and simplified it a little bit and realized, you know, just me and this van and this dog and this guitar, and I'm good to go.
I think that's one of the positive you know, kind of effects of the COVID pandemic. The negative ones are very obvious, but the positive ones that I think there's been a lot of talk about and a lot of people are starting to recognize is that people realize, hey, I'm miserable doing this work I'm doing right now.
Right.
And when they got the chance, it had been so long since they'd gotten the chance to slow down and kind of take stock of where they actually are, you know, that they didn't even realize this until they were forced to do so.
Yeah.
And I think a lot, what are they calling it now? The Great Resignation or something. I heard this term in the media for the first time the other day, the Great Resignation, just this wave of people quitting these jobs that they hated and, you know, pursuing, realizing, hey, my life is happening right now.
Well, and I also heard there's a Great Resignation Regret. And there's a lot of people that were like, this isn't life. This isn't what his happiness is. And they quit their job and they're like, oh, wait a minute, I still need like money and stuff. So I think it's trying to find a balance, because, you know, I also believe that, listen, if I'm not working or if I'm not grinding at something, I'm not really living.
Oh, I totally feel that way. Yeah. You know,
people, you got to find a balance.
People tend to view my lifestyle as being fairly idyllic because I travel around and I post pictures from all these beautiful places and things. And it is, it's a privilege and a gift to be able to live it, and a blessing. But at the same time, I work every day for hours, every single day, at making better music and making more music and, you know, acting in the capacities of manager, booking agent, van driver, animal handler, you know, all of this tech crew. A guy in Maine last year, there was a couple who was at one of my shows up in northern Maine, and they said, we're trying to figure out, as I was loading in, we're trying to figure out whether you're the road crew or the artist. And I said, I'm both. And the van driver.
I'm both. I'm a better paid artist.
And I have to take care of the animals. And So, you know, I do believe in that ethic of work too, and not just because it's something that you should do, but because for me, that's, you know, that's living, is the feeling of that growth and that movement that comes with working hard at something and towards something.
Well, I tell you what, can we do another song?
Absolutely.
I forget what song. When I met you at the Chesapeake in Maine, you said you had put out a new album.
Yeah.
But you didn't have one. I remember I said, can I make a request? And you said, I bought an album. Maybe it is the new one. Is it the one with the sketch of you on the front?
It's a collage, actually, by my friend Dan Zadilla. It looks like a sketch because it's that good, but that's made of gazillions of tiny clippings of National Geographic magazines.
Okay. Well, that's the one I bought.
Yeah.
And thank you, because I actually, but I think there was something you were working on something new. Anyway, I said, can I make a request? And you said, well, what do you want to hear? And I said, I want to hear your favorite song. And you picked that guitar up so quick. So maybe we could hear that one again. I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember what it was either, but I can play you what it might well have been.
Yeah.
Last time somebody made a similar request of me and ended up tipping me $100 for it, I might add. I'd like to mention that milestone just to normalize the tipping of $100. It's okay, folks. You can do it. You're feeling a little tipsy. You're feeling good about life. You've got this $100 burning a hole in your pocket, and you see a musician and he touches your heart. Throw that thing down.
Hell
no,
yeah.
Shame. Don't let your friends talk you out of it.
I think I only tipped you like $10. I'm sorry.
It's $10 is a wonderful tip. I'm kind of half joking and half also totally okay with being tipped $100.
You know, tipping's changed a bit too over the pandemic. You know, people that used to tip like $2 need to, you know, turn it up a bit. Right?
It did get better. Yeah, for sure. I noticed that too.
I'm like, you know, give him $20. My dad's like, $20.
Last night, I kind of taunted the audience into a $20 tip. So the tip jar was going real slow. It was like maybe $2-3. And whenever I'm playing in a fancy seafood restaurant like that, I say, who's having the lobster tonight? Raise your hand if you're having the lobster. And this one guy pointed to his buddy and everything. And I look over at the tip jar and I said, I don't know. A tip jar. It's not looking like a lobster crowd tonight.
No.
And the guy got up and dropped the 20.
Oh.
Sometimes they just need a little helping hand, you know?
Hey, there's no shame in your game.
But here's the song I might well have played.
Yeah.
It's a favorite of mine among the crop I'm working on for my next album. And I wrote this one up in a treehouse in Rockland, Maine last summer. It's called To Fly So Low.
Good morning, señorita. Do you have time? And can you spare a dime? It's been a hard last couple breaks. Life's an open boat, the past's awake. I've just come down, but only halfway down. Nothing but sky. We're all to be the ground, too low to fly. How to run, much too far away from the sun. You dig so deep, you scrape the bottom of the well, you fly so low, you scuff the rooftops of hell. You love so true, Lord, it rings like a bell, calling all the long lost wayward souls back home. Gotta be out of your mind to fly so low, to fly so low. For years I'd go with my head dangling down, send myself up and bring me crashing down. Oh Lord, hide the years of life. A fool he could have squandered all his time. And when we meet, oh we will meet again, it will be sweet. Long out on the run, much too far away from the sun. You dig so deep, scrape the bottom of the well, you fly so low. You scuff the rooftops of hell, you love so true. Lord, it rings like a bell, calling all the long lost wayward souls back home. You gotta be out of your mind to fly so low. Gone, I'm just halfway gone, trying to save or to be saved. Walk in each other home somewhere between the cradle and the grave. You dig so deep, you scrape the bottom of the well, you fly so low. You scuff the rooftops of hell, you love so true. God, it rings like a bell, calling all the long lost wayward souls back home. You gotta be out of your mind to fly so low. You gotta be out of your mind to fly so low.
Nice. So these are all original.
Yeah. All the temperature changes are getting to the wood a little bit. Yeah, I've always focused on original songs. I started playing music so I could write because I was really deeply inspired by the Beatles from a very young age. And the thing that fascinated me most was the song, the power of the songwriting, you know.
Yeah.
So that's always been kind of my main interest. In fact, I was a bit too neglectful of technique probably early on, and I kind of had to go back later and put myself through some pretty intense practice regimens, which I still do, you know, always trying to improve the technical ability and the relationship with the instrument to get across the songs.
So what do you prefer doing, your original music, or do you like doing covers?
The originals by far.
Yeah.
Somebody else has already done the covers, and they've probably done them better. I mean, occasionally you'll do a version of something, and someone will say that's their favorite version. And that always feels great, especially when it's a song by somebody like Bob Dylan or Tom Petty, and like, wow, they like my version better. That's an honor. But nobody else has my songs, you know. That's my unique contribution, and everyone who writes a song has that contribution to make, you know. And there may be millions of people who connect to them, or there may be five, but they're for whoever they're for, and they're your particular gift to give the world that no one else is ever going to give.
When you're like trying to set up a gig or, you know, something new, when you're dealing with a restaurant or a bar or some place to perform, what do owners prefer, covers or do they prefer originals, or would they like a little of both?
You know, there's a lot of debate on this, and you know, like a lot of bar musicians will say you have to play covers and you can only mix in a few originals, and some people say you should only always do all originals. The answer lies somewhere in between, and it depends on the venue. I will say that I've never had a bar complain that I played too many originals, and I always play at least 75% originals on the low end. If it's like a theater gig or like a listening room gig, I'll play 95% originals. If it's a bar gig and it's really loud and not that many people are paying attention, I might do, you know, 75% originals or maybe 60% originals. In a bar gig setting, it's a good idea to throw in some well-known covers, because sometimes that grabs the ear. Somebody's like, oh, Harvest Moon by Neil Young, I love that song. That guy just did it well. What's he got going on there? And then you grab their ear and they'll tune in, you know. So in a bar setting where people are not there to see the music, they're there to eat cheeseburgers and drink beer or whatever, I like to keep throwing in a cover, you know, maybe every four or five songs, it depends on the gig, to grab the ears of the listeners and maybe bring them back in and give them something they can connect to because they've never heard you before. On the other hand, there are gigs that just want you to play covers, and I just generally avoid them. I don't really enjoy it that much. I love playing covers. I love playing my favorite songs, but again, what I'm here to do is to play you the stuff that comes through me. So
the other thing is if you're doing a great original, a song of yours, and it's a great song, I might be thinking, is that a cover?
People ask a lot.
And you're also doing covers of your own original music.
Yeah, right.
So that's kind
of
cool.
I'm in many ways a different person than I was when I wrote many of them, if not all of them.
Well, and listen, I've seen, my hat's off to anybody that's, you know, can stand up and perform whatever instrument. But
I agree.
I've definitely heard some people that are excellent at covers and then tend to struggle a little bit with originals. And, I totally get it. It's, and that's what makes the world great, right?
Well, I know some musicians who can rock the balls off of some classic rock covers and stuff, but when it comes to doing their own original stuff, they come across as tentative and uncertain, and they don't sell it as well as they might because of that. And I think that's because they've put so much emphasis on training themselves to do covers, and in a way, it's an easier way to connect with an audience because you're doing something that's familiar. When it's not familiar, you risk not getting their ear, but to me, that just challenges you to learn to capture an audience's attention, which you have to do, and which I also do through, I'll try to get a laugh if nobody's listening. A lot of my show involves pretty lengthy spiels and storytelling and, various rants and raves of different kinds.
I saw an interview recently with Bill Burr, he's a comedian.
Yeah, he's
hilarious.
Yeah.
He's funny. He's so funny. But, I forget who was talking. I think he was on the Pat McAfee show, and he was... And they're like, kind of trying to figure out how, he does his show. And he goes, listen, I have an intro. And then the crowd, the night, the moment is a living kind of being, right?
100%.
And it's kind of like, he's like, all right, I'll do this. And then if things seem to be going this way, we'll start going this way. And people are looking in the window.
The windows,
people
are touring,
like we're monkeys.
Like manatees past a tank wall.
like monkeys. Hey, anyway. But it's like a living thing. And he's like, he comes out and he kind of feels the crowd and that kind of sort of sends him into a direction.
I try
to avoid my whole act as long as I can.
That's exactly it. In fact, I don't even make set lists when I perform. Unless it's like a 45-minute theater show where it's going to be pin drop quiet. And the crowd's going to have their attention on me 100% of the time, and I need to keep it compact and tight and make sure that I get, if I only have 30 or 45 minutes to play, then I need to make it count, so I need to design kind of the arc of my show to accordingly. But if I walk into a bar to play for 2 or 3 hours, I don't have a set list or a song list of any kind. I just read the energy in the room. If I feel like I need to do Ring of Fire by Johnny Cash because it's going to get people moving around a little bit and they're going to be like, oh, cool, all right, Ring of Fire. And then what's this guy doing? And start paying attention. That's great. If I get to a bar, because there are bars where no one will pay attention to you at all, and there are bars where even though it's still a bar, you'll have almost the complete attention of the audience, and you don't know when you're coming to some new place what you're walking into. So I like to leave plenty of space to take the show. I never rehearse a spiel or a, I have little bits that kind of evolve over time and stories that evolve and are added to and tweaked and are different every time I tell them. And even I'll improvise within the scope of my own songs a little bit. I'm not a jam band or anything like that, but I'll do things differently depending on how the room feels. So to me, that's a very important element of it that you don't, at least in the kind of venues that I work in, that you don't just go in and do the exact same show every time, or at least it wouldn't be interesting for me.
Well, I can tell you, man, as a kid growing up, my mom, Tommy, here's some money. Go and make a request. Like everywhere that we went that had like a performer, in a restaurant, go make a request for me. Make a request. I feel bad. I can't remember. She always had this one song, and it was probably,
It was probably Country Roads, Take Me Home.
No, I think it was Frank Sinatra of some sort. But
I do some Sinatra in my act.
Yeah, but I would go, and so as a kid, I always, can we go make a request? Can we go make a request?
Yeah, yeah.
And so anytime I'm at a restaurant that has a performer, I always go up and make a request.
I have no problem with requests at all, and I'm happy to play them if I know them and if I like them. And people are usually quite respectful about it. Sometimes they're not, and that's not so cool. Sometimes people come up and wave a 20 at me and like, play Walking in Memphis, play Walking in Memphis. I'm like, sorry, I don't know Walking in Memphis, but you can give me the tip anyway. And they don't. I had a guy yell Walking in Memphis across the room at me for about half an hour once in a crowded bar. And then I finally just, stopped and said, hey, are you yelling your drink orders at the waitress, at the bartenders that way too? And all the bartenders and everyone at the bar started applauding. It's just a matter of respect. A respectful request of a bar musician is perfectly reasonable. And I know a lot of songs, so if somebody comes up and says, hey, do you know some Neil Young? Do you know some Beatles? Do you know some Bob Dylan? Do you know some Sinatra? Yeah, I'll do it for sure.
Well, I always think it's easier, especially just out of respect to the performer. I try to find a genre or a group, right? Like I'll say, hey, you know any Pearl
Jam? That's easiest for sure.
Right. It doesn't, you know, when I specifically want a certain song, you know, that makes it tough. So
it feels really cool when you know it, though. You know, somebody will come up and say, hey, do you know Imagine? And Imagine happens to be the first song I learned on the guitar. It's like, yeah, in fact, I can bust that out for you. And, you know, I must know 1,000 songs.
So right.
There's a fair chance that I'll know your request, especially if it's in kind of like the folk or classic rock genres. But it's an interesting territory, you know, because I'll tell it for your listeners, just in case you want to be a good consumer of music. Here's the way that musicians prefer to get a request. You come up politely, you wait till they're finished with their song. You don't yell it at them while they're playing their song. You drop a tip of whatever size you feel that you can afford into their jar first. And yes. Then you ask, you know, do you know Tangled Up in Blue by Bob Dylan? If they say no, you don't take the tip back out of the jar. You say thanks. And, you know, if they know it, then they'll play it for you.
Yeah.
But this just happened to me like 2 weeks ago.
And if you're really nice, they'll come do a podcast with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they'll be very happy and grateful to do so.
They'll sleep in your backyard.
My favorite request story just happened to me 2 weeks ago, and it was the one where I mentioned the $100 bill. So this woman in a winery, there's, you know, a full small room. She yells, play Take Me Home Country Roads, which is probably the number one most requested song of any acoustic musician, maybe on par with Wagon Wheel, I don't know. I don't like the song Take Me Home Country Roads, so I never learned to play it. I know, you know, it's very... Take me home to the place. You know, everybody knows how it goes, but I don't know all the verses or anything. And I get asked for it so often that I tend to go into a little spiel of this sort when I get asked for it. So I did that, you know, under the microphone and I started talking about. I said, I'm going to shock you twice. First, I don't know it. Second, I don't like it. And I said, you know... She was aghast at that, and I went on to explain a little bit about musicians and song choices, and I see her face, and I think, well, hell, maybe I'm going too far this time. Maybe I'm actually offending this woman. I didn't want to do that. That wasn't my intention. But then she starts flashing a bill at me, and I can see it's a big one. I can't tell which president is on it, but I can tell it's not one that I see a lot. So I say, all right, well, you know, if you're going to tip me big, you know, my mom's over there in the audience. I'll get her to come hold my phone in front of me. I'll sing you Country Roads. I mean, I'm an old whore in a way. Every musician's got their price, and it looks like you know what mine is.
There's no
shame.
And she
says, no, you know, what do you really like to play? What's your favorite song? And I said, well, it's so hard to say. And she said, what do you like to play best? And I said, my own material. So she said, play whatever song of yours you most like to play. And my mom starts whispering the title of the song that I just played for you, which is To Fly So Low. So I played that song, and the woman comes up and drops what turns out to be a $100 bill in the cup and walks away. And after she left, I asked the crowd, I said, I'm still trying to figure out how I got tipped $100 for refusing to play that woman's request of Country Roads. Can anyone explain this to me? And the owner of the winery comes out and he says, well, I can. You made her cry with your song. When she got up out of her seat and walked away, she was teary. So I asked her husband what happened, and he said that she thought the song was so beautiful that it brought her to tears. And that just absolutely made not just my day, but maybe my month. So, you know, don't be afraid to turn down a request now and again, folks. Sometimes it works out. And I really appreciate that woman for not only being so generous, but also for being so open-minded. And, you know, I had offered to make her request work for her, and she wanted to hear what I would prefer to offer. So that's, you know, that's a special attitude.
Well, and I think that, you know, it's like when you go out to a restaurant, to a decent, or, you know, nice restaurant, and they put out the specials. I always eat something off the special.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like, the chef is back there. He's got something figured out. He's figured it. He's thought about it.
He's put some time into this.
He's put some time into it. You know, maybe something fresh has come in.
He's put some love into it.
Right. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? I want to take whatever's on the special.
Exactly.
You know, I think I asked you the same thing. I said, I'm an old idiot from the 80s, so I said, do you know any Pearl Jam or something, you know?
I love Pearl Jam. I grew up during that.
Yeah, but, you know, not many people know Pearl Jam as a request.
You actually made me rethink getting some Pearl Jam into my set, though. I thought that might be a good idea after you asked me that.
Absolutely.
I should know some songs from 10, because that's a badass album.
That's a badass album. They just started touring again, in fact. But and then when I think he said, I don't know any Pearl Jam, and I go, well, what's your favorite song? You know, just like a chef making a special, you know, what do you love to do? I think you ended up playing the Mystic.
Into the Mystic.
Into the Mystic.
Maybe so. I probably did at that gig. I doubt I did in response to what's your favorite song, because it's not, but
No, I think I asked. Maybe it was a different person, but I can't remember. You played either your favorite song or an original or the Mystic.
I don't remember what I played, but I remember.
I was high really on Lobster,
appreciating
bro.
That. Yeah, because it'll give you a buzz. $1 million buzz. No, I really appreciate it. I remember appreciating the request very much because I always do appreciate an openness to what I want to do. Because oftentimes I've had people who will just sit next to the stage all night yelling the names of their various favorite songs. They'll be like, well, do you know any of this? No. Well, do you know any Gordon Lightfoot? No. Do you know any of that? No. And I'm like, well, listen, I've said to a guy one time, if you listen, you know, I'm sure that you'll find something you can enjoy in my set. You know, like I've got a show prepared. If you'll give me a chance to entertain you, you might like it. You know, I'm sorry I don't know the 10 songs that you've been yelling at me for the last half hour of my show, but, you know, give me a chance here.
I remember now.
I put some work into this.
I remember now. You played the Mystic, Into the Mystic.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy loves song. And then that's when I went over and made a request.
No, oh, right on. Yeah, yeah. I definitely did that one last time because I was trying to think of anything that resembled a sea shanty to play while I was.
Can you play that, or is that
Into the Mystic?
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Do you mind? I'm a huge fan of that song.
You might have to pay some royalties to a ASCAP or something like that.
Yeah, well, I have no money. Well, we make no money. We have no money.
They can't take what you don't have, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Out of my dead hand.
We were born before the wind, also younger than the sun. Yeah, the bonny boat was won as we sailed into the misty. Hark now, hear the sailors cry. Smell the sea and feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the misty. When that foghorn blows, you know I will be coming home. When that foghorn blows, I wanna hear it. I don't have to fear it, 'cause I wanna rock your gypsy soul, just like way back in the days of old. And magnificently we will fold into the coming home. When that foghorn blows, I wanna hear it. I don't have to fear it, 'cause I wanna rock your gypsy soul, just like way back in the day.
good one.
That was awesome for
a good seafaring song.
Yeah, nice early in the morning, putting you to the test this morning.
It is kind of early for the old.
Well, that's probably one of the problems with doing this podcast is that it's like I am only available in the mornings, and these, you know, a lot of performers are like, dude, I ain't singing before one.
So, I wake up early these days. It used to be a bigger problem for me than it is now.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, I'm 43 and I've become a morning person. In spite of myself, I always figured I was going to be like a mutant night creature for the rest of my life, staying up till dawn and sleeping until afternoon. And now I find that I do my best work in the morning. So I get up, you know, just around dawn and do my exercise and my coffee, and then I sit down to work, you know, because as Stephen Pressfield said in his brilliant book, the War of Art, the professional shows up every day.
Mm-hmm.
I forget who the quote originally came. There was a quote, I think it might have been Somerset Maugham or some other writer who said they asked him if he prefers to sit down to work or if just waits for inspiration to strike to create, you know, that old kind of saw about whether or not you should wait for inspiration to find you or you should go after it or whatever. And he said, I only work when inspiration strikes. Thankfully, she strikes exactly at 9:30 every morning.
Nice. Well, I looked out the window this morning because I didn't want to bother you. I looked out and your van door was open. I was like, oh, he's up.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Get up with the birds these days. I love it. I just find, you know, and in a way, maybe that's kind of what we were designed for more than anything else. I kind of feel like you have to. Some people probably differ in terms of their biological clock, but you can set that thing, and from what I've learned about circadian rhythms in the last few years of my life or something, you know, we're kind of set diurnally. If we wake up early and we see light and get light in the retinas of our eyes, it kind of sets our clock in a certain way. And I just know that I feel way more energetic nowadays working in the morning than I used to write and practice late at night when I was younger. It's probably an age thing too, I guess.
Well, I think we get older and we find value in things. I know for me, I love to get up when the sun's up. Right,
yeah,
when the sun
too.
Comes
it's
up.
It's a beautiful time. It's peaceful. There's nothing else you feel like you have to be doing.
I was doing a lot of running early, and for some reason, I just kind of lost my desire to run. I'm like, oh, I need to find it again. But
it's easy to fall out of it, but once you get back in, it's easier to stay in.
Well, part of the problem is I'm happy.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell you that the deepest, darkest parts of my running days, there was sadness, right? And
yeah,
now I'm just sure. Super happy and just really content. And, you
yeah,
know,
use exercise as a means of staying happy because, you know, I've struggled a lot with mental illness in my life. There's a long, rich history of that in my family. So exercise, rigorous exercise and meditation and things like that are pretty essential to me remaining in a state where I'm able to do my best work, you know. So the run or whatever exercise it is that day definitely comes before anything else except coffee. Coffee always comes first.
Well, my problem was I was doing a lot of exercise to eat poorly.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
So,
I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah, so I've been just trying to eat better and trying not to, you know, disguise it by running 5 miles every morning, you know.
One of my friends told me once that he's like, you know, we kind of work out so we can, like, you know, drink 4 or 5 beers at night. And I was like, oh, well, that's a little... It's backwards reasoning, but whatever yeah. works for you.
Hey, well, I mean, there's
nothing wrong with drinking the beers if you want to, but there's a lot. Exercise has a lot to offer, and I think it was, you know, half a joke. But
no, of course, right. So the you got a pretty booked up summer. How are you coming back to Chesapeake and Maine this summer?
No, next time I'm down here, I'll be playing Dogfish Head Brewing and Eats on September 30th.
Okay.
I mean, it's possible I'll be back in the summer if Chesapeake and Maine would reach out to me. But things are booking up pretty fast. I'll be going up doing Michigan and Western Pennsylvania in July. I'll be on the road for about a month or so, heading up to Michigan, the Upper Peninsula and everything, which I'm really looking forward to. It's beautiful up there, vast forests. And then in late August, early September, I always go up to New England, up the seacoast, so Maine and New Hampshire and then into Vermont and maybe parts of New York.
You're all over.
I basically schedule my travel for where I want to go at the times of year I want to go there. I like to be in Maine when the wild blueberries are in. I like to be down in Florida and New Orleans and California in the wintertime. And I like to be back home in early April when the wild mushroom season starts up. So
I saw that. You know, I follow you a little bit on Instagram or Facebook or Instagram.
The Faceiverse.
One of my kids are like, are we, should we be worried to have a stranger in our backyard? And I go, maybe. Well, I think he does MMA, so I think he's probably a good guy. Is that right? You do some MMA or some?
I train jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, I used to judo and jiu-jitsu, mostly jiu-jitsu these days.
I said, I think he does jiu-jitsu. He's probably a decent guy.
At least you can, I mean, not everyone who does jiu-jitsu is decent, but overwhelmingly they seem to be, because I do it when I travel. And it's been this whole extra community that I'm a part of now, which is beautiful. So I meet the musical communities and the people who tend to gravitate towards those scenes. But then I always, any town I'm in, I seek out a jiu-jitsu gym and I go drop in and train with them. And man, I've made a lot of friends that way too.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot of.
I have not had a bad experience yet. I've been to probably, you know, 20 different gyms in the past year, and I have not had a bad experience yet.
Listen, I don't know shit about jiu-jitsu, but I know that the people that do it have a lot of respect for one another.
They do, because it's so hard. It's so humbling. You know, you make yourself very vulnerable when you start, and you realize how helpless you are when somebody else is making a pretzel of you with your own limbs on the ground.
They have a lot of responsibility not to kill you.
So, yeah, people who do jiu-jitsu, unless the school is kind of a bad school, the assholes get weeded out pretty quickly.
Kind of like Karate Kid.
Yeah. If there's like the Cobra Kai of jiu-jitsu,
Cobra Kai,
which I'm sure there is, but for the most part, because nobody wants to roll with a guy like that. You know, nobody wants to roll with somebody who's in there to hurt people and who has ego. So you're kind of going to get shunned if you go to a school where humility is cultivated as it should be. And there's nothing I've ever done that, except for maybe music, that fosters humility quite like jiu-jitsu does.
So
you're on to something a little bit there, yeah.
Well, I saw you do it, and I'm like, this guy's all right. This guy's a good guy. And I knew that.
I'm fairly not. I tend to get along with everybody. I making friends is one of my great pleasures in life, and I very rarely come into any kind of conflict with anybody about anything. It's just not.
Well, one of the things I feel like I've learned, and even as myself as an example, listen, we all go through periods in our life. Maybe not spectacular, right? Not as shiny as everybody else. But, you know, it's coming through those experiences and making ourselves better. Sometimes it takes a few years. Sometimes it takes 10.
Sometimes many years.
Yeah, many years. But you come through on the other side and you know. Myself as an example, there was a period in my life where no one really wanted to hang out with me.
Yeah.
Very self-centered, do what I want, whatever makes me happy, and really inconsiderate of others and, you know. That's a bad avocado, right?
I've come a very dark and rocky road myself, to be honest. And fortunately, my friends, you know, were always with me. But, you know, oftentimes, I'm, it's hard to look back and know why. But it brought me to where I am now, which is a place that I never really thought I could be, where I'm just very open to discovery and growth. And there's a lot of joy available to me. And I'm real grateful for that.
Well, I said to you this morning, if you could spend the rest of your life in the clouds with God, or you would sign up to do another term, another Call of Duty here on the planet, what would you do?
It's funny because there's a song on my new album that's exactly about that subject.
Is it?
Yeah.
Can we hear it?
Yeah, of course.
Let's do it. What would be your answer, though?
This song. This song is my answer.
This song is going to answer my question.
Yeah, it will. It will. I wrote this, this is a little jazzy number I started writing at home in Pennsylvania, and I just hated it. I didn't like how it was going at all, and I thought, all right, I'm going to leave this one by the side of the road and drive away. So I did, and I got on my bike to go to the grocery store, and the thing's following me around, buzzing around my head like a fly, and I was like, no, I told you to piss off. I don't want to finish this one. It wouldn't go away, and then a few weeks later, I'm up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, sitting by the Gulf of Maine in a garden of beautiful flowers, looking out at the Gulf of Maine, and I remember something one of my favorite writers, Kurt Vonnegut, said, which is, during those times when you find that you're truly happy, you should mark it by thinking to yourself or even saying out loud, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. And I'm sitting there thinking and saying that to myself by the Gulf of Maine, and the rest of the song came out. And it's on my new album with some horns and clarinets and things that make it sound real, real sweet. This is called Back to the Angel Maker.
I'm gonna fold up my wings, sail 'em back to the angel maker, hang around this world for a while. I'll trade the robes off my back, the halo from my forehead, for just one more sunny day beside the Gulf of Maine. Taking the free falls, the joy rides, nosedives that'll thrill you, the horror shows that play when you're alone in the dark. Oh, let it break your heart. Probably won't even kill you. No, it probably won't even leave a mark. I'm gonna fold up my wings, sell them back to the angel maker, hang around this world for a while. I'm gonna lay down my harp, sell it back to the angel maker, play around in this body anyhow. I'll trade my pie in the sky, in the ever after, for a great big piece of strawberry in the here and now. Love in the pit, the joy rides, the nosedives that'll thrill you, the horror shows that play when you're alone in the dark. Oh, let it break your heart. Probably won't even kill you. No, it probably won't even leave a mark. I'm gonna fold up my wings, sell them back to the angel maker, hang around this world for a while.
Nice.
Thank you.
So you'd sign back up.
What's that?
You'd re-sign.
Yeah. You'd exactly.
Well, yeah, it is, you know, it's funny because we put on this like, oh, I can't wait to retire or heaven or, you know, whatever it is in the future that's going to relieve of us all this burden, right, that we're carrying. And sometimes I don't think we realize that, you know, this could be really the best part of our lives.
Oh, yeah.
This might be heaven.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, musicians are guilty of it particularly as well. It's always, well, when this happens in my career, things will be great. You know, when I get a booking agent, when I get a record deal, when I am selling out theaters, you know, when I can stop doing these shitty bar gigs, it's whatever it is. But I always say to people, you know, if you're not enjoying doing this right now, you should probably do something else, because most of those things will never happen for a majority of the musicians. So if you're not enjoying it exactly as it is right now, then that's the way I feel about my music career. If there's any point where I realize I'm not enjoying what I'm doing and I'm waiting on something else to happen, I'll go do something else.
Or redefine enjoyment, right? Sometimes it's been put in our head that this is something and we live that way and really, you know, we don't see the forest through the trees.
Well, you have to reframe it. I mean, I used to think more that way. I used to think, oh, if only I didn't have to book tours myself. It's so miserable and it takes so long and it's so hard. If only I had a booking agent. And I would still love to have one. But at the same time, you know, like, I get to live in a way that's pretty extraordinary that a lot of people kind of would love to be able to do themselves if they weren't, you know, busy with their own careers and their families and such. So,
well, I do think that there's a, you know, you're 40, I'm 50. There's a transition that does start to happen that it becomes less I have to and more I get to.
Yeah. And yeah, that has happened for me. And there's a social framing of purpose too that plays into this, where we're told that we're supposed to expect certain metrics of success,
right,
to come across our screens by certain ages, and if they don't, we feel like a failure.
Right.
You know, in a way, I kind of chose to be a misfit early on. I don't have any you know, children or anything like that, and that's by choice. I mean, it could have happened. Had the road forked differently, it might have happened, and I would have been in love with that life too, I'm sure. It just didn't, and I didn't choose to pursue it, and so it's enabled me to kind of reframe that whole thing for myself. There aren't any expectations now for where I feel I'm supposed to be. As long as I'm working hard at doing what I love, and as long as I feel like there's movement, then I'm happy with it.
I love it. Listen, man, you want to take us out with real quick? So, your Instagram is
This is Leo DeSanto.
This is Leo DeSanto.
There's a few Leo DeSantos, but if it isn't This is Leo DeSanto, then it ain't Leo DeSanto.
Well, there's, and I think your little picture is your album cover.
No, I don't think so. It is on Spotify, but
maybe
not,
that's
not,
how,
not on Instagram.
Yeah, you have a unique album that's. How, I was like, because there is a few. I was like, remember that picture.
Once again, I have to shout out Dan Zadilla for that album cover because it's really a remarkable piece of work, and I have it hanging in my home. The original collage, and his work is available on the internet too. Dan Zadilla with a ZDILLA. Incredible collage artist.
Yeah, check out Dan Zadillo. Yeah. And you're on Facebook. I know that.
It's also This is Leo DeSanto. It's facebook.com/thisisleodesanto. That's my handle on most of the... It's where you can find my music content. And then just leodesanto.com is my homepage where you can get all the audio and video and stuff. But if you want to hear about van stories and everything, Instagram and Facebook are the place.
Well, and if they want you to come play at their place.
There's a contact form on leodesanto.com, and I'll come play at your place. Don't think you're too far away, because you're probably not. As long as I can get a van there.
Have a van, and we'll travel.
If you're in Belgium and you're willing to accommodate me, I'll come there too, whatever it is.
I love it. Well, that's what this is about. You know, I think, I was very impressed. I love it. I love your music, and I think you're just a great guy. Not that I'm going to help you do anything, but
you're helping me now by just even if one person hears this, hears my music here that wouldn't have otherwise. That's
have you played at Missipillion Brewery?
What's it called?
Missipillion Brewery.
No, I'm not even sure what word you just said.
The Missipillion. I think it's a river.
Missipillion. Okay.
Missipillion Brewery.
No, I'm looking for a list of venues down this way though, because I love coming to Rehoboth to play, and I'd like to have more venues so I can kind of make a little shore trip out of it. So I'll have to write that down.
Well, Ian Bryant, who was the first guest of the Delaware Live Music Podcast, he actually he texted me, I got a gig at Missipillion Brewery. And I'm like, awesome. Oh, so, cool. There's a chance. I'm actually friends with Eric.
If you're listening to Missipillion Brewery, I'd love to come down and see you.
Yeah, well, I'll reach out to, I'll give you an email to a guy to reach out to, and but I don't want you, I want it to all kind of happen around when you're down here, right? I don't want you to have to go here, and you know that. I'm not telling you.
One gig has to happen first, and then I book the rest around it. So, right now I'm coming down again in September, so I'm looking to book some other stuff that weekend.
Have you played Lefties?
No, I didn't even know about it.
All right. Well, I got some work to do. I got some people to reach out to.
I'd love to have your suggestions for venue. That's how I find places.
Dude, Lefties is awesome. That's where I found Ian.
He was cool.
He was down there jamming. My wife right there, baby's right there. It's a hustle, and I'm like, I love it. I love that hustle.
I really respect the folks that are out there doing it with their children and spouses in tow. I know a lot of them, even some that have lived in a van with their, spouse and small child, and they're making it work. They'll go on tour with their family and make it kind of a family vacation. I'm doing a little of that this summer. My girlfriend's coming up to the Upper Peninsula with me. I kind of booked the tour so we could have like a working vacation together, and
nice,
us and the dog, and that's a rarity for me to have any of the human beings in the van with me, so that'll be fun.
Well, listen, we appreciate it. Maybe you can do one more song and we'll just take us out.
Sure.
So yep, check out Leo and all of his stuff that he's doing. He's my new friend, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you too, man. In the streets there are no cars, there is no light. In the forest owls are waking up at night. In the houses and the bedrooms out of sight, people are dreaming. Do they sleep because there's nothing else to do? Do they dream because in dreams they're born anew? To discover when they wake they'll have become one of the good ones. I don't expect a lot, but I ask too much. And I lean upon my anger like a crutch. Even though I realize it's such
sad way to go on. Outside the rain falls and the churches ring their bells, believing most of us will die and go to hell. If God is good, you know I'm sure that he can tell one of the good ones. Contraptions of skin over bone were not made to be good. Exploding or sinking like stones. Darn if I could, I would call back the reckless words I let fly. That I see written on the teardrops in your eyes. I hope that you can see how hard I try. I will try again. Maybe it's good enough to know we can be free of the rusted chains of time and misery. I'll do everything that I can do to be one of the good ones. Contraptions of skin over bone were not made to be good. Exploding or sinking like stones. Darn if I could, I would keep you with me here tonight under the stars. But instead, you'll catch a plane, you'll call a car. I'll always tell everyone I know that you are one of the good ones.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Catch you later.